on Education Matters. In segment one, Ray Kakari, who is Dean of the School of Manufacturing, Engineering, and IT here at Gateway Technical College. And also in segment two, Dr. Jennifer Charpentier, who's Executive Director of the Gateway Technical College Foundation. For Education Matters here on WGTD-HD, I'm your host, Steve Brown. Thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
Support for WGTD comes from Elsie May's Bakery and Cannery, featuring homemade beverage mixes. Perfect for summer parties. Varieties include Bloody Mary, Margarita, and Lemonade. Stop in to grab yours today at 5819 6th Avenue. Support for WGTD comes from Jack Andrea. It's patio season, which means alfresco dining at Jack's Cafe. Stop by and enjoy the sun along with breezy summer cafe soda fountain specials. Proudly serving the Kenosha community since 1911. 2401 60th Street, Kenosha.
This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Linda Fleshinsky, a mother, grandmother, freelance writer, and former Racine School Board president. And now, here's today's host.
And good morning. I'm Jim McClure, your host this week for Community Matters. Our guest is Walworth County Sheriff Kurt Picknell. Not your first time on our forum here. Sheriff Kurt, welcome back.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
Sheriff, we come to you this Saturday morning on the month right after National Police Week, and you chose that as the time to honor your staff. And I think, first of all, we want to let people know what it's like to be one of the many people doing many roles, and I can't think it's a better way to do it than to talking about some of these awards that you've given out, because I always find it fascinating when I sit down and think about it that a sheriff or a sheriff's deputy is more than a law enforcement or more than a correctional officer or more than an investigator. It's all these things working together. When you go through that process, first of all, how do you pick out overall the people who get awards?
Well, one of the selection factors is it's actually a peer review. So it's employees nominating coworkers for things they see and then bringing that to my attention and to a committee for decisions on whether or not they're going to be awarded. So I think that's pretty special. Along with that, when we go through that National Police Week, I deliberately am inclusive of the other sections that make up the entire sheriff's office. What I mean by that is, prior to National Police Week, there is the National Telecommunicators Week, National Corrections Officer Week, and the National Administrative Assistant Week. So all of those components make up the entire office of the sheriff's office. So not just one piece, but all of it in the public safety umbrella.
Let's talk first of all with some of the action ones. If I recall, there's one where a citizen was involved, and one or two where one of your deputies were involved. Let's start with the deputies first that were recognized for either life-saving or being particularly effective in what they did.
Yeah, it's the quick action and decisive actions that take place to really save and preserve life, and those are on display every year at award ceremonies. And with that, it's always great to identify citizens in the community that have stepped forward in a selfless way to benefit the community when a need arises right in front of them at a moment's notice.
Yeah, I especially like that part. The citizen that you recognize, she did some heroic action on her own, if you recall.
was, and it was very heartfelt, and talking to her at the ceremony, you could tell it just really was genuine with her, and it was heartfelt, just comforting a person that was at a traffic crash that ultimately turned into a fatality.
Was it a matter of probably the most important thing you can do if you're not a first aid thing, just to be there and hold the hand, I think, is as many a combat nurse can attest, to be there in somebody's last moments. And so something that any deputy could face, too, out on the job.
Absolutely. And you could just be that driver, one or two vehicles behind a crash. And how would you react? Would you stop and help? Would you drive by? Would you try to just go there and comfort another human being? And her decision to do that, even though she had some tentative thoughts about doing it, she put that aside and went and performed excellent. And obviously, being recognized for that is very important.
Feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, which is often the case. Wasn't there other a situation, too, where one of the correctional officers noticed somebody on intake that clearly was injured and he had to take some life-saving action there?
No, Jim, you're spot on. That's exactly what had occurred. And a lot of times when you see people that are taken into custody out in what I would say out in the field, which out on the streets, that custody occurs, whether it's by the sheriff's deputies, our investigators, our drug unit, or municipal departments or federal partners or, you know, state patrol. There's a lot of different agencies that if it's going to turn into a full custodial arrest in custody, coming into my jail, that's quite an emotional journey for some people, both physically and emotionally. So our observations and views of people coming into the jail and how they're going to settle in or how they're going to react being here within a confined area, not being able to leave on their own until the criminal justice process decides that for them, or they make bail. For some people, that could be pretty substantial. And once in a while, some people will try to self-harm themselves as a result of that. And our staff reacting quick will save them, essentially, from themselves.
It's got to be a stressful time for everybody when you're going into the jail for the first time or the second or third. How are your correctional officers taught or trained to keep things on the level, whether they've got somebody who is swearing up a blue streak at them or crying their heart out because this is the first time they've made a bad mistake in their life? What's the effective way as a correctional officer to handle that situation?
There generally are about three that are recognized within their training. One is the jail academy. There are topics that are taught on that, and also within our corrections training program here. And our corrections training program is a series of months where they're training with established trainers that are corrections officers in a mentorship program where they are exposed to more things and they take on more of a workload throughout the training program until they are operating as a single corrections officer. So it's established within that training. And then also the crisis intervention training that is ongoing.
Do you ever have anyone either switch over from another division like patrol, or are there people who are the equivalent of baseball utility players who can play every role? Is it fairly specialized these days?
A lot of these positions are specialized, but to the core of your question, Jim, there is movement within the divisions. Corrections officers test and become deputies, and some deputies move in, test, and promote into the detective bureau, or have assignments at times into our drug unit. So that movement, or court security, or other examples around the within the sheriff's office, all of that is it strengthens the entire organization.
As we go through our hour together, we'll get more into the area of corrections, especially in talking about your accreditation. But before we get to that, while reviewing some of the people that you recognized this year during National Police Week, I believe there was also a citation for Deputy of the Year. Let's hear all about him and how he earned it.
There's three categories of Employees of the Year: Deputy of the Year, Corrections Officer of the Year, and Civilian of the Year. And our Deputy of the Year is Brody Fiedler. He comes to us from the Whitewater area. He was a community service officer up there, did an excellent job up there. And his desire, even when he was young, was to be a Walworth County deputy.
That's neat. And to you know, let our listeners know, a community service officer is often the person you see in uniform, but not necessarily in a police cruiser, who does things like traffic control and, you know, is visible to the community. But it's, I guess it's the equivalent of the quarterback that moves up to being from being a reserve to a starting. That's quite an accomplishment to move up from community service officer. What did he have to do that? Go off to the academy and the whole nine yards?
Yeah, for us it would be the employment testing, the written test, an interview, suitability screening, psychological, physical, and drug screening. And that's just to get on the eligibility list before we actually will do an employment background on them before offering them a job.
How many total under your wing in the office?
210.
When it seems like to the common reader, you know, the Beacon does very good coverage of your awards every year, and the other papers certainly join in too. But it seems like you give a lot out, but it's a relatively small percentage of all the people you manage. So it's quite an honor to get this kind of recognition, I imagine.
It is. These awards have significance based on the numbers that you have observed. One of the things that I find very rewarding talking to citizens and having a conversation with you today, Jim, is just imparting what the Sheriff's Office does on a day-to-day basis. And there's five major divisions here, and three out of the five major divisions run 24 hours a day, never stopping. Of the five major divisions, there's patrol. That's the uniform patrol division. That's the one you see with the marked cars and the uniforms out on the street. The second one would be the Emergency 911 Dispatch Center and emergency management. That dispatch center never stops. The third will be our corrections division. And through the main jail and our work release center, electronic monitoring, that's, again, 24 hours a day. The other two remaining generally work most of the work day and into the evening, but they're subject to call out any time. One would be the investigations division, which is the traditional detective bureau and drug unit. And you could understand that some of those calls don't happen just during traditional time, and some of the investigative work is not done during traditional time. The other one would be support services. Support services has a lot of components to it. One is the fleet management, court security, if you ever go through our judicial center, the screening and our deputies over there, our internal training division for basic training all the way up to highly specialized training, central records if you ever come to the front counter, and you meet the clerks up front, that's a part of support services. Our IT staff that collaborates with the department's IT department, but because of our reliance on a lot of computer systems that you'd find up in the dispatch center for emergency 911, you're shaking your head, you know, Jim, along with the computers in the cars and all the servers and mainframes that keep everything moving, A lot of information flows in and out of here and is critical for officers, not just deputies, but area police departments as well. So that's all focused around support service, and then you have administration up here.
Yeah, that was fascinating because I was trying, while hearing from Professor Picknell about the sheriff's office, I came up with four. I wanted to race you. I did pretty good. I had everything but support services. And my gosh, what they have to accomplish and all the different facets involved there. Are they? Is the basic breakdown that each division has a captain in charge of it or a lieutenant?
It is. And one of the components of support services that we didn't touch on as we moved along a little bit, and it's statutory, is civil process. So if there is any subpoenas or seizure of property, that would be an order from the court relative to a judgment from the courts for money or property transferring, or if there was a foreclosure of a house and a mortgage that wasn't fulfilled, that takes time, but as a result of a court action, my deputies within the civil process division, within this civil process unit, within the support services division, they are the ones that are actually selling these houses to the highest bidder after a foreclosure action has been approved by the courts.
Do any of them go on to careers in real estate? If not, they're pretty well qualified, I would imagine, from appraising to saying, you know, available at the low, low price.
I don't know that any of them move on to that, but they would certainly have an insight into that part of our society. But again, I just bring that up because it's another component that I think a lot of listeners or readers in the area don't realize all the different components that move within this office.
Yeah, and I hope that we can cover most of them, and you're certainly giving a great overview as we go. Let's use as a vehicle, too, talking about, which to the public may be a line under your correspondence. It's a press release that goes out. But I think it's important that the public realize that the accreditation you just got isn't one sheriff slapping another on the back or, you know, people recognizing your own, or is true of many professions, doing things for recognition within your profession rather than the public. Let's talk about that accreditation, what it represents and the importance of it, and then we'll go into the different components because it certainly talks about your five divisions. How important is this accreditation starting from square one? What is it, and how did you start the process?
I think it's extremely important. I'm very proud of it. We started the process back in 2015 when I became sheriff, and it was one of those efforts that I knew that I wanted to have fulfilled on behalf of this agency, not just for the agency, but for the community. And accreditation, as you just pointed out, Jim, it can happen in educational professions, healthcare professions. A lot of different industries have standards in which they conduct their profession. And accreditation really at the core is willingly and voluntarily allowing an organization that has standing to come in and evaluate your operation and tell you how you're doing.
And it's not just to give out bows, ribbons, and sheepskin parchment. I imagine the whole reason an organization like that exists is to, you know, raise the level for all departments across the country and the state. Speaking of the state, you're fairly unique in that group of getting this accreditation, right?
That's correct. We are the third sheriff's office in the state to get it. And if you go to the Wiley Egg website, and I'm sure we can talk about that a little bit more,
sure.
It actually shows a lot more about the accreditation process and who is accredited. So it's a fairly small amount of law enforcement agencies. There is a core accreditation award, and then there's a full. And the core is generally for smaller agencies defined by a certain number of employees, and then the full is generally reserved for larger agencies, such as the sheriff's office here. But with that, I'll just say one thing. If you have a calibration tool in your hand, mm-hmm. and you have some type of equipment, calibrating that equipment with that tool, knowing that you're aligned, is really the most important part of accreditation. How do I fit within my established profession, and having a third party come in and evaluate and tell me that. But also, it's not just a one-time effort. It's an ongoing process. That accreditation is good for 3 years. We've worked on it for 3 years. We're awarded that in December of last year, which I'm extremely proud of. Again, I'll say that. But it also marks the obligation that we move on to 3 years from now, that we're going to be up for accreditation and inspection again, and we're already on our way for that.
You know, that's an interesting point. We've all gone into the auto repair shop where they have the automotive service excellence decal up, but that belonged to Mel, who left 15 years ago, or the restaurant with the statewide accreditation for best ribs in town, but it's kind of cracked in the middle and it says 1974. Is that part of the obligation that when you start this process that, hey, you're in it for keeps, you're going to keep going back report every 3 years?
Yes, and for agencies that do get accredited, that is the inherent obligation that you're taking, if I will, you're establishing and baking it into your agency's culture. And it's really it would be excellence in law enforcement profession prescribed by ever-changing standards that the Wisconsin Law Enforcement Accreditation Group will be subscribing to all of its members, whether there's a change in state statutes, whether there's a change in federal law that would affect a policy, or whether there's a change in some type of court decision. So those are all radiated down into changes that ultimately occur in our life for everything we do, but uniquely in policy and practice and what you do within law enforcement. So it's not a static effort. It's ongoing, but it's always about alignment with best professional practices.
One of the things I noticed with your recognition of staff and public during National Police Week was, under Sheriff Williams, Wendy Werner, your administrative assistant, Captain Scott McClory, who is often in addition to everything else he does, the public face. He's the one that steps to the podium during the tougher stuff and either introduces you or takes on the bear himself. I guess a cynical person would say, geez, it's nice for him to give out. It's nice for him to give stuff out to the people that work directly for him. But Sheriff, they really earned their spurs on this one with the accreditation process, didn't they? I imagine that figured in. If that is a emergency call, one, feel free to stop the interview. Two, if it's a really good one, I want to hop in with you and bring the recorder, but I assume we're okay.
It is okay. It's a call from one of my captains, and I'm sure that my secretary will probably take the message and knock on the door if needed urgently. So thank you with that, Jim. To your point about the recognition of the division commanders and my administrative assistant, Wendy Werner, they've done a tremendous job on moving this vision forward. When I explained to them the vision for this, the process, and how we're going to integrate this into our everyday work here, not just towards the accreditation recognition, but beyond that, which we are now, that this is how we do business, explaining the benefits to them and explaining the benefits to citizens and the confidence that citizens can have in us, that we're aligned with best practices, everybody understood it. And everybody was up for the challenge. So with that, everybody was all in, and it's really about that change to achieve the goal.
Give me a sense, if you would, please. Give our listeners a sense of how big a task this was. It was more than a couple of interviews and a handshake. You've got it. How huge is it literally, does it touch on all 200 of your people in the course of pursuing that accreditation?
It does. There's policy reviews, revisions, you're establishing policies, you're re-indexing all of your policies into a different readable format. And with that, you're establishing key points within all of those policies, and you're establishing what is called proofs. And I think you probably read of that as well. And the proofs are just what they say they are. They're tangible documents establishing that you're doing what the policies say you're doing. That's a part of the inspection as well. It's those pieces. But generally speaking, in a greater overview, most agencies that embark on this accreditation for full accreditation, it'll generally take them between 3 to 5 years to become accredited. And we were accredited with it in just a little under 3 years.
In the course of your career, which if memory serves me, goes back to 1984?
It was the mid-80s.
Mid-80s. Let's not date you. I mean, you're already, look like you're barely in your 30s, but let's not get you back toward, or if we can, let's leave you back around 28 or 29. That'll be your version of Jack Benny never being older than 39. Is it safe to say that in one aspect, in corrections, maybe that's been one of, if not the division where there's the biggest change in terms of the monitoring and other things that we do? Can you talk through that process of having to monitor people that come in and, you know, the old ankle bracelet and all that is, and you mentioned IT as part of support services. Tell me a little bit about that monitoring program and what's involved with it. I think most folks aren't aware that there are different ways in the corrections process to, you know, process cases and see what happens to people after the judge bangs the gavel.
In many ways, Jim, what I'll do is I'll answer your question in a roundabout way, but I'll get to it. But unique to what you're saying about the corrections division, and you and I have spoke about this before, my start at the sheriff's office was actually in corrections. I worked in the jail as my start here, back working for the town of Delavan out on their boats and the roads and working out on Geneva Lake, their police boat, and working in the jail here. So, and then finally coming up through the ranks here and becoming sheriff, and I'm honored to be that. Having said that, corrections has evolved over the years. When I first started, our corrections facility was downtown on the old square downtown, and the work release center was in one of the buildings out on the county campus here down at the end of past the hospital. So the physical plant moves have changed in a new facility that opened up in 1995. But also with that, the needs of the corrections officers for training and technology coming in, and also inmates coming in with unique mental health issues, with addiction components, with chronic health conditions, they continue to be an issue for us. And it's different from just an iconic jail cell that you would envision maybe in the movies or on TV. Bear in mind that your local county jail throughout the United States is the starting point for anybody that might ultimately, in states where the death penalty is allowed, that's their starting point in a local county jail. Or if you're serving a life sentence where that is possible in the state of Wisconsin, they serve it here first, generally when they're pre-trial. They haven't gone through trial yet. There's a presumption of innocence, and they're here throughout their trial. And if there's a verdict of guilty from a jury, they'll remain here while there's a pre-sentence investigation. And once the pre-sentence investigation is done and there's a sentence hearing in the courtroom, if there is a sentence any further than 1 year, longer than 1 year, all the way up to life, they'll be serving in the state prison system. If it's shorter than that, they'll be serving out their sentence in local jail. So from somebody that has just a minor infraction of a fine or driving, domestic abuse, drugs, sexual assault, all of those things, they come through the door at your local jail first, and that's where they're generally stabilized, both mentally and physically and mentally. Hmm. And medically, I might add. So it's a huge component within a sheriff's operation throughout the United States and around the world.
The program has progressed to the halfway point where I have to let people know where they're hearing us and other things. However, we'll give them a little tease, Sheriff Picknell, that we'll be talking about the famous Community Matters Confessional, where you and I have established over the years that I tell you my latest brushes with the law, to kind of overstate it. At any rate, we're with Sheriff Kurt Picknell of Walworth County, and you're listening on WGTD FMHD out of Kenosha and Racine on 91.1 FM, right here in Elkhorn, the county seat of Walworth County, on 101.7 FM and 103.3 FM in Lake Geneva. And on your computer, if you want to listen again, this will be a podcast on WGTD.org. And again, Sheriff Kurt Picknell, welcome back for the second half of our program. The Community Matters Confessional, to add a...
I'm ready, Jim.
Right. And this always comes with a disclaimer that one time I applied for the sheriff's office position when I was in much better stead, and I've had a bit of a lead foot since. I am pleased to say, sir, that for the first time, I think it's been a year and a half, I have no ticket for anything.
From a traffic safety standpoint, I'm exceedingly proud of you. Thank you.
That's my version of the Police Week Award, citizen recognition. However, with me on the road, it's always a learning experience and a good radio question. The last time was 3 weeks ago when I was driving up part of the construction zone on Highway 67. Just part of the way. I'd never be one of those people who drives all the way through. I wouldn't even think of that, of course. Anyway, I was stopped by one of your deputies. As always, highly professional experience. He was more delightful in particular because I imagine you get to be a fairly good study of people within 5 seconds. And he pretty well figured me out as a halfway decent guy that appreciated law enforcement, but was also, this will strike you as a surprise, a little bit of a smart aleck. But we had a good conversation. The almost offense was I was driving under inclement conditions with my lights off.
Yes.
Now, it was raining like it is today, this weekend, and it was after, now I will say it was after sun up, but everything was completely clouded in. I never realized that, and I imagine this is something you encounter on the road from time to time, somebody that's driving in a way that, you know, they aren't speeding, they aren't cutting people off, they're not in road rage, but something they didn't think about didn't occur to them as a safety issue.
It is very much so. In those conditions that you described, Jim, you're not using your headlights for your benefit.
I thought you were going to say I wasn't using my head, but that goes without saying. Not using the headlights for my benefit.
You're using the headlights for the benefit of the other motorists.
You know, I was once, this will strike you as a surprise, but about 20 years ago I was in traffic school. The Illinois way of doing things is, you know, you can cut things down a little bit. On points or whatever if you go and sit in a school. And one of the things that impressed me, obviously not enough, but one of the things that impressed me, and I do generally follow it, is don't wait till sundown to put your lights on. If you want to, drive with them on all during the day. It's only to your benefit and those around you.
Absolutely. You'll see a lot of manufacturers of motor vehicles that have daytime running lights. So it's the same mindset of essentially when you're turning your headlights on, I'm being somewhat repetitive, before the hours of darkness, you're helping the other motorists around see you. So it's a direct benefit for them and you.
We're going to get into summer safety too. And you mentioned being part of a water patrol role in your past, but first I want to take you along on my commute into Milwaukee when I do that, and the things that occur to me as I drive down the road. The first thing that occurs to me is, gee, I just saw a state patrol vehicle. Then I saw a Walworth County Sheriff's vehicle, you know, at the side of the road. Then I see a town of Lynn, or I see a city of Waukesha vehicle. There's two ways that this happens. One is that they're all going to their court session if they're moving here in Walworth County. The other is what I think are called grant weekends or whatever. I mean, what's going on with that? Does that mean that there's been additional funds so you can step up patrols? But it seems like everybody's out there all at once on some weekends. How does that process work where departments can kind of up their game a little bit?
That's exactly what it is, yeah. Jim. It's targeted traffic safety grants, and then it comes in the form of speed enforcement or seatbelt enforcement or drunk driving, OWI enforcement, and is targeted to certain areas. A lot of times it's tied into what we would have as crash data in the area. What areas are experiencing these types of crashes or violations? So through the federal government, from the State Department of Transportation, there are pass-through grant funds that we apply for and are awarded at times. And we will host that grant coordination. and our local law enforcement, police departments, and the sheriff's office will coordinate at certain times and certain locations for these targeted benefits for motor safety.
Something I've always wondered about. The other day I was driving toward the Big Bend exit. By this point, we've moved beyond the Waukesha or the Walworth County Waukesha line, which I think is about when you're on I-43, Maquonago, isn't it?
Correct.
Okay. This guy all of a sudden pulls off the road in front of me. I can't figure out what the problem is. He's got a nice brand new silver sedan, probably, I think it was a Buick. And then as I go by, I notice he's leaning on one side, so he had a tire blowout. One of the interesting things about daily commuting, interesting to me, is that I look at the dead soldiers along the road. In other words, the cars that have been there for a while, they've gotten the orange sticker that says you've got 3 days, and then they're gone. This is probably a law enforcement equivalent of what happens to that one sock in the dryer that's missing. What happens to that car, especially in this case, where it was a nice vehicle, and first of all, did they probably just not even come back because they can't afford it? And where does it get towed?
There's a few scenarios, but generally speaking, most of them are removed by the owners. They'll actually call into the sheriff's office, to the dispatch center, and they'll let us know that their car is broken down with a time estimate of when it would be removed, or they have a repair truck, tow truck coming out immediately. Our big concern would be that if they're in the lane of travel, so it would not be a motorist hazard. We want to establish that. And if it's not, then generally speaking, if there aren't weather events like in the middle of winter where snow or plowing would be a concern, we'll let it sit there for a certain established time, generally within about a day or 2 days, giving the owner enough time to get that vehicle removed. And if that doesn't occur and if it's an urgent thing, we'll generally call for a local tow truck to get it removed for the general motoring public's safety, with notes in our dispatch center for the owner that it's been removed. But we always give the owner an opportunity to get it moved first of their choice.
Yeah, I had assumed that that was purely a state police function, and I can say that I have literally seen them 72 hours later on the minute. You know, I've seen a tow truck show up. How do you split responsibility on both the state highways and the interstates as far as who patrols what, who does regular enforcement? Do you ever say, well, wait a minute, I've got the stretch between U.S. 12 and U.S. 14 this week or whatever? How do the different law enforcement agencies coordinate what gets patrolled and where you're doing the speed zones, et cetera?
We talked about the concentrated traffic grants before, but generally speaking, it's a coordinated effort of a combined enforcement. With most agencies dispatching through our 911 dispatch center, the coordination works out very well. But having said that, there are mutual responsibilities generally on freeway systems, whether it's interstate, state highway, county trunks, or local roads.
Came across an article in the dentist waiting room that said, don't ever date a cop. And if memory serves me, during my time when I was convinced I wanted to be a 911 telecommunicator for the rest of my life, it seemed to me that a lot of the people that I sat with and a lot of the supervisors had that relationship where their husband was a law enforcement officer. First of all, what kind of backgrounds does your communications division come from? And I know they're called telecommunicators because they're a lot more than an operator or a note taker. They've got to make a lot of quick decisions fast. What's the background of some of these wonderful people that protect us in their own way?
Great listeners, great keyboard processors, can multifunction and multitask in highly emotional settings on the phone, receiving calls, and also transmitting over the radios to law enforcement, police, fire, EMS, public works. So you can see that in many ways they are my air traffic controllers.
That's always how I've depicted it to people, that it is pretty close to that, right down to the screens where you can see where the different units are as they move about. The other thing that occurs to me, being a person in radio, as horrific as some of the things are that someone in the patrol division has to see, you know, the damage that can be done on the highway, the damage that can be done within a home or business or whatever, there's a certain element that what you hear in the you know, what we call the theater of the mind, in some ways it's almost more traumatic, I imagine, to hear the screams, to hear the urgency, to hear the situation, someone's outside my door and I think he's back to get me, or to hear on the radio occasionally with news stories, including involving your agency and office, the officers say, I've got somebody down, or I've got somebody coming at me with an axe, which I think happened in town in Geneva a couple. Is there such a thing as PTSD training or help to help the communicators deal with all they come against emotionally?
There is that training, and there's that awareness. And I put it akin to like a flu shot, where you're building up and you're inoculating to the what would be the ill effects of that over time. Because there's stress and there's toxic stress. And the toxic stress could be event-driven individually or just an accumulation over time. And it's really the awareness of how you can individually, with skills for you, of how you can individually recalibrate back to a wellness state mentally, physically, spiritually, whatever spiritually means to you, but emotionally, so you can maintain your level of professionalism in a wellness state for your family, for yourself, and for performing your job.
You know, I want to ask, if you don't mind, a slightly personal question. I know from the people I go to church with and some interactions I've had with deputies, your chaplain, I know that you're a man of faith. Is it safe to say that for the most part, there's no, just like there's no atheists in foxholes, there's a certain comfort in the sheriffing line of work to know that there's something more out there than just what you see in front of you every day?
There is, and I'm proud to say that. And also, I think uniquely within the public safety umbrella, and I say that from law enforcement and all the different activities we have in the sheriff's office, police departments, fire, rescue. Generally speaking, most of the people that you see in these professions, there's a calling to do this.
You know, we've talked about that, the almost priest-like, you feel called to do this, and you're the kind of person that rushes toward danger rather than away from it. Sheriff Picknell, we've got about 2 minutes left. Let's touch quickly on summer safety. We've certainly mentioned on the road. What about out on the water? You've served as a water officer. What do people really need to start watching out there that they traditionally don't?
One of the things that's unique with boating is you don't have lanes and edge markers and dividers. It's open water. Meaning if you're on a road and your car's on a road, you know where you're supposed to be in a lane and stop signs. You don't have that on water. And most listeners can fully appreciate that, being out on the water. We're blessed with having beautiful lakes in the area, a lot of recreation. Most of the time when people are out on boats, having boater safety for anybody that's going to be the operator of the boat, having the right equipment, knowing the rules of the lake and any specific ordinances to that unique lake are important, but the right of ways, the speed, the lighting, and understanding the unique pressure that are on the lakes during the summer. There's a lot of boats in terms of kayaks, canoes, paddleboards, sailboats, runabouts, ski boats, cabin cruisers. There is a lot of points for potential confliction. So with that, being very aware when you're out there boating, where you're at, where you're going, and your surroundings around you. Boating is viewed as a recreational sport, and I agree with that. but there's an element of danger there that always exists. So having the right mindset when you're out there to fully enjoy that moment is key.
Sheriff Kurt Picknell of Walworth County, in charge of 200 people. We've covered an awful lot of ground.